I had to be taught to be second class. I am not born that way. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, bringing you instant inspiration. I had to be taught to be second class. I am not born that way. You know, we are doing a lot of work in Guyana, in Ghana, in Nigeria, in Egypt, and a bunch of other places that are quite interesting. Most of the people there are black. And we're doing a lot of work in New York, New Jersey, Florida, and Virginia, and where have you, Montreal, Canada, and Toronto. And some of them are black.
Bahamas.
And the Bahamas. And I don't know, if I had stopped and think about it, there'd probably be even more. And here in California, too. And it's amazing how many of these people are black. Now, these people may have been taught that they're second class, but they didn't believe it. They didn't believe it because they know that they are leaders. They know that they're leading a philosophy, and they're not going against being black. They're not going against being not white. They're not going against the lot life played or gave to them. They are taking what they have within them and using it to its max. They are not born second class. They're born number one. They're born the top of the line. They're born fantastic, and they will always be that way. But the thing is, they're like the prince who is born into a different family than his kingly family, and he doesn't know he's a prince. And one day he finds out he's a prince, and he says, oh, go on, you know. Here I am just a commoner. You call me a prince? You are. Here's all the proof. Well, okay. So then he goes in the palace, and they teach him what he should do to be a prince. Now, the first thing they teach him is that he's number one. He's going to be the king. He is a top man. He's a top dog. And immediately, chest goes out, his chin goes up, and shoulders go back, and he takes authority, not unkindly, but he takes authority for the new role he's playing. He's not any longer a peasant. He's not any longer a commoner, you know. Now he's an uncommoner. and he is, very nicely. Now, this is what we have seen around the world with every black that we've met. They are the uncommoners. They are the people who are ready to say, I am God. I was reading in the Emerson syllabus about what Ernest Holmes had said. And he said, God in me, as me, is me. Now, you couldn't say a more positive, definite statement that I am God than that. And yet, so many of us, so many people on the face of the earth are afraid to say that you're God. Because you know the minute you say you're God, you're going to have to start being in preparation to be the king. Because once you know you're the prince, you cannot get away with not being the king, because the king is going to die one day, and you're going to be the king, unless you die first. And some people do, because they can't stand the responsibility. But you see, all of our black friends, all of them, without exception, are outstanding, marvelous, fabulous beings. They all want to come here to campus and study. They all want to take our courses. We love it. But we say to them, you may not take the courses until you read the syllabus and find that what we teach is what you believe, what you can conceive for yourself. We don't want you taking the course just to get degrees. We want you to take the course because this is what you believe. And so they read the syllabus. Oh, yes, yes, I agree, I agree, I agree. And then when a problem comes up, they sometimes say, oh, why me? And then we tell them, hey, you already agreed. You created that problem. Now, create the solution. Create whatever it is you want to take place in your life. But that's the way it works. That's the way it works. You are the prince, and you can't get away from being the prince, because the next step is the king. And if you didn't have the king in you, you couldn't be the prince. You see? And so they get the message. They get the feeling. They get the understanding that though they may have been taught to be second class, they weren't born that way. They were born a prince. They were born God. They were born that way. And all of us are. All of us are. But we do not take the privilege of walking that way. because we don't have as much money. We don't, you know, I'm interested in the Filipino group, the New Thought group in the Philippines. They have an email page. They have an internet page, which is quite expensive. Yeah, expensive too. But it's quite expressive and very, very well done. And they have been taking quotes from here and there and everywhere. And in there, one of the first people to speak on the subject of prosperity said, "I don't have, I don't have, I don't have." And then pointed out how it worked so long for things and didn't get it. And then the next one starts saying, "Yes, but we have to speak our word for prosperity. And prosperity is more than money." And then the next person writing in says, "Yes, prosperity is more than money. I started taking the course from the Emerson Institute, and I took the first course. I only did about 4 lessons, and then I stopped because I didn't have time to continue. Nothing wrong with the course. But then after 6 months, after stopping it, after taking only a few lessons, I realized my whole life had changed. My whole attitude about myself had changed. I ran back to finish that course." He says, it's so wonderful. It taught me values. It taught me that money is not the value. The value is in having a healthy body, having a healthy mind, having wonderful friends, having a lovely home filled with love. Not the castle on the hill, but the house that's filled with love. Because the castle on the hill can be a very cold place, very unhappy place too. And so he said, "Man, did I learn a lesson." And, you know, as I browse through these things, I probably read 2 tons of literature today. And as I did this, so many of these people are ready to say, "I am God." But to say, "I am God," is that God in me, as me, is me. You know, that's one statement. But "I am God," it takes another thing. Now, I believe Ernest Holmes, I'm sure he did, said, "I am God." Because I have read much of his work, but I didn't think of keeping those phrases, and now they're coming to my mind by other people who did pick them out. It's quite beautiful. When you realize that you were not born less than who you are, you were born the master that you are, and you were trained away from the master you are. You were told, "Not yet, you're not ready to hear this, you're not ready to learn this. Later I'll have time to teach you." Well, Galileo made a fascinating remark. And Galileo said, "You do not go to school to learn anything. You go to school to reveal what you already know." And of course, this is a statement we've heard before. And Galileo said that way back when. Now, where did he get this brilliance? Where did he get this genius from? Because there's no time on that. There's no limit on that. Brilliance comes the minute you're ready to spout it out. I tell you, say what's in your heart. Say the first thing on your mind. Say the first thing out of your head. Oh, don't. Now, think about that before you talk. Before you act, think about that. Decide whether you want the repercussion that you're going to get from that. And so we think about it and we don't say anything. We think about it and we don't do anything. We think about it and we complain. Yet the little children, they don't think about it. They just barf out what they got. Barf, that's not the right word. They just shout out what they got. And they say what's on their mind. And they don't say it unkindly, not at all. They say it from an inner wisdom. And if we have the ability to listen to them without judging them and saying, "Boy, are you a little brat? You think you know it all?" They do. They do. And we are the ones who are limiting them by calling them little brats, by calling them know-it-alls. And of course, really, they are know-it-all. And we are too. But we have denied ourselves the opportunity to say, "I know it," by saying, "I don't." One thing that we have taught, religious science has taught this, Unity probably has taught this too, divine science probably taught this too, and so forth. "I know that I know that I know God in me is the answer." Now, nobody refuses that. Even Jesus taught that God is within you. But "I know that I know that I know God in me is the answer." And how important that is. How important that is that whenever anything faces us, before we begin working on it, we say, "I know that I know that I know God in me knows the answer." And then we go. We don't have to fumble. We don't have to guess and wonder. We just stop and say, "I know that I know that I know God in me knows the answer." And the answer is there. Now, You say, well, Herb, why do you give me these problems? Why don't you just say, I know that I know that I know, and make it work? Well, if you haven't figured that one out yet, you are a long way from the scoreboard. Okay. You talk about Zen masters, and you can say, over there they have Zen masters, and over there they have Buddhas, and over there they have Jesus, over there they have whatevers and whatevers. But, hey, everybody's a master. You just haven't realized it yet. You haven't claimed it. You haven't named it and claimed it for yourself that that's your reality. And it is your reality. But it's only your reality when you say, I know that I know that I know. And you don't. Can you imagine in these Zen stories that we were reading here how many masters would have thought, you little freaks, you know. Like one Zen master, he was imperturbable. And his young monks, students, were thinking, we can disturb him. We'll shake him up. We'll shake him up. And they hid in the corner, and dark corner, and when he came along with a hot cup of tea in his hand, they jumped out at him and said, hello, everybody, you know. And he just quietly, placidly looked at them and went over to the corner and put his tea down on the table and leaned against the wall and shouted, ah! He was the master. He couldn't be shook at the time he didn't want to be shook. If he were shook at the time they wanted to be shook, he'd have hot tea all over his hand. And he didn't want, or all over them. You know, they must be careful how they play their games. But did they learn a lesson? Quite likely not. Because he hollered. They didn't think that he had a time lapse between when he was tried to be frightened by them and the time that he hollered. But he could do that. You can do that too. You know that. You can be very much hurting. Your leg can be broken. And you can still do wonderful things. I told you about Benny, our helper, the workman who worked for my dad. Big, burly fellow, muscles all over him, you know, just solid muscle head to foot. We wondered if he had any brains in his head. But he was smart. He was a good guy. I don't mean that too unkindly. A little bit, but not too. But Benny was working on our front yard in Wauwatosa. He was putting in some big pieces of Lannan stone, which were at least 8 or 10 inches wide. They were maybe about 5 feet long and about 3 feet high, maybe 4 feet high. Doing it himself. I mean, idiot. Pure idiot. Well, he unloaded most of them, got them all set, and set them into place in our front lawn. And then as he was unloading the last one, it touched his leg, and broke his leg. He didn't know that. He felt it hurt because it bumped him, you know. And he continued to lift it off the truck and put it in place with a broken leg. And he went home that night, and he woke, and it was a warm night, and he woke up in the middle of the night, and he didn't have any covers on or anything. Ah, he was screaming his head off. His wife said, what's the matter? His leg was swollen up as big as a balloon. She dashed him off to the hospital, and he had to have surgery immediately, you know, to take care of that. But he didn't even know it. He didn't even know it. He continued to lift these heavy weights and jockey it into position by himself. And he shouldn't have done that. My dad had told him to take a couple of helpers along, you know, but he didn't. I'll do that myself. Bop, bop, bop. Piece of cake. Well, he was an amazing man. And for him, it was a piece of cake. But he didn't surround him with the pure white light of love first, so that he wouldn't have had that little experience. But that was Benny. And nothing disturbed him. Nothing disturbed him. He'd send me away to get him a drink of water, and I'd bring him back a gallon of water, you know. And he'd take the gallon of water, chug, 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 the whole thing in one gulp. One gulp. Man, what a guy. But, you see, we're all masters. We are born masters. He was born a master. He didn't know that, but he was born a master. He didn't know that in the sense of saying, I am a master. He just did whatever he wanted to do. Whatever needed to be done, he did it. Why my dad didn't make him into a bricklayer and things like that right away, I'm surprised. But he was so good at being the full labor squad all by itself that my dad got more work out of him from that area than he would have if he had been a bricklayer. Although, I have a feeling that if Benny were a bricklayer, he would not be a normal bricklayer. Where the bricklayers would lay maybe about 12 or 15 courses in a day, he would lay 30. Because, you see, he didn't limit himself to say, I have to go slow because I'm only supposed to do so much in a day. We have a routine here. I'm being paid by this routine. That wasn't his way. That wasn't his way. But when he associated with the poor people who said they could only do so much in a day because that was the rule of the union, if he had associated with them, then that's what he would have done. They didn't tell him that he shouldn't carry maybe 100 hods of mud up a ladder a day. They didn't tell him. They were working up there laying brick. They had about 8 bricklayers, and he had to get mud for them all. That's the mortar that you put between the brick, and lay them and tie lines for them. And not only that, he had to get the brick up there. If Howie and I were there, we'd throw the brick up and get them up there, but we weren't always there because we were in school and we were doing other things, you know. But if we weren't there, he did it. Tuck, 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 tuck. He could take brick from down here on a piece of wood and throw it up on top so it'd land like a gentle feather on the top, you know. You know how the arc and then like that, without chipping a brick, without doing anything to it. Master, a master. But he didn't know it. And that's probably why he was such a master. If he had ever realized how good he was, I'm good, I can do it, but it's a game. You know, and being good in a game and being good as an overall super Zen master is another thing, you know. But you see, I had to be taught. I was second class. And we were, all of us. We were taught that by our parents. We were taught that by the school. We were not taught by the school that we're coming there to reveal what we already know. We were not taught by the school that we're coming there to unlock the inner treasure house. And the writers have written about this for centuries. Plato, Aristotle, Marcus Aurelius, you know, all of these famous writers and famous ancient philosophers, they wrote about this, but we missed it somewhere. But we're finding it now. And we're teaching it to the world. And when we go to these schools in Ghana and Guyana and in Nigeria and in Switzerland and wherever we go, and we tell this to the children, yeah, that's true. That's true. See, they're not too far gone yet. They're not over the hill as far as realizing that, yeah, that's true. When Anita came here, she was over the hill. And we worked on her and worked on her and worked on her. And then all of a sudden she says, yes, I can. And she went and did it. But when she first came here, she couldn't. When she first came here, she was a mouse. She left here as a jaguar. And this is beautiful. And do you think that she appreciates that? No. She has no idea what has happened to her. And that's good. That's good. You don't need to know what happened to you. All you don't need to, but all you do is just be that new person. I tell you, many people come to this school and many people leave this school as ascended masters and as fulfilled beings, and you don't know it because you don't know what they look like. You don't know what they look like. When you are a fulfilled being, then you'll say, my God, there's quite a few went through there. Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. But you see, you only see what you are. And if you are a fulfilled master, then you can't say there's no fulfilled masters here. You know, then because that's what you see. And if you are a student, you see other students. And if you are a klutz, you see other klutzes. And the more klutzes you see, the klutzier you are. And the more beautiful beings you see, the more beautiful you are. It's wonderful. You know, it's fantastic. So with that, we will say adieu to our wonderful thought for today, that is our instant inspiration. I had to be taught to be second class. I am not born that way. And so let's be reborn in first class beingness that we are. I love you, I love you, I love you.